Okay, happy Hanukkah, everybody. So tonight we're going to be exploring a little bit about the Tzenerena, perhaps the most famous translation, at least as far as Jewish people over the centuries go. And by Jewish, I'm referring to specifically Eastern European Jewry. So let's get into it. So my first question for everybody is, when you think of Tzenerena, or Tzena, or Enna, what do you think of? Shira Shirim. Dr. Denisov, anybody else have anything else that they think of? They think of Tzenerena. What do they think of?
Simplified translation of
it. Right, I heard simple translation, right?
Simplified only for women because they can't really take anything more serious.
Right, simplified only for women because they can't handle the proper text, right? So that is what you may have heard, right? But so technically what it is a Yiddish translation of some stories of the Torah, Haftarah, as well as the Megillot. And, you know, people normally think it's aimed at women, and they, whether that's right or not, we will hopefully explore that together. Okay. And also people say, you know, there's a lot of Midrashim, right? This is what people normally think when they think of Tzenerena. You might also think that, oh, you know, something that, you know, the good, like, you know, the bubbies used to read, but, you know, who honestly would ever read it nowadays? So as far as it being very full of Midrashim, so for instance, here is the weekly Midrash, right? The Outscroll version, right? So then, which very much is the, you know, kind of shoved set around the corner. Point is that it's, you know, seems like it would fit better with their, you know, Little Midrash says, the Midrash says, like that whole school of, that little school of books, more so than in terms of, you know, anything that we would honestly expect to be a little more serious. But if you take a little closer look, you'll see it's more complicated than that. The person who wrote it is somebody by the name of Rabbi Yaakov ben Yitzhak Rabbi No, or Ashkenazi, depending on where you're looking. Proper name is Rabbi No. He wrote it, the book was written in Ashkenaz. So, like being like in Germany, like that area. So he was born in Lublin, Poland, and moved to Genova, right? And he was known as a renowned lecturer, you know, a darshan, and spent his whole life teaching for the most part. So he wrote Tzenerena at some point in the, you know, early 1600s. He wrote a more complete version aimed at a little, that was, you know, a little more philosophical than Tzenerena in the 1620s. He had written a halakhic work about Yeridea. That was only published by his son after he passed away in order to raise money so they could publish more versions of Tzenerena. And also, he had worked on a Yiddish translation of the rest of Nevi'im Ktuvim, but it wasn't actually published by him or his works. It was actually, they kept his name because he was famous for writing Tzenerena, but they actually scrapped his translation because the publisher didn't like it. Instead, utilizing somebody else's Yiddish translation because that they felt a bit better with Rashi. So we don't actually have his version of the Sefer Magid because he died in the middle of doing it. He only got as far as Eov, but we simply don't have it. If you see the Sefer Magid and you think it's his, it's not really his. So I asked, we're asking everybody, why was it Tzenerena written? So what would we think? Right? What's the reason? Why would somebody go out of their way to make a Yiddish translation in the early 1600s.
To make it more accessible to everybody.
Right, to make it more understandable to everybody, right? The default we've had for everything, right? Why was it translated? Because people didn't speak the language anymore and they needed a translation to help them better understand. So, but then why was everybody saying before that it's, you know, meant for women? Like, where does that come from? So I was expecting people to say that it was written specifically for Jewish women who could read and only understood Yiddish. And that way they could, similar to what we had before, you know, instead of them, you know, reading, the bootleg German version or something else, that's what they have a nice Jewish proper something to read on Shabbos, even if they can't necessarily understand any of the words going on in Laning. So in fact, Wikipedia says that it's called Tzenerena based on the pasuk from Shir Shirim, right? Tzenerena benot Zion, go forth and see, O daughters of Zion. Right, which indicates that it was intended for women who had been less well-versed than men in Hebrew, the standard Jewish liturgical language. So this is the standard, what you would think. And as far as, you know, as far as this being the case, So it was pretty widespread. So, for instance, in terms of, you know, what is a classic thing that a good Jewish woman would do? So here is a the first time I ever heard of Santorana was in the context of, can women learn Torah or not? So we had a, right, so here's the, you know, so here's the Chofetz Chaim, right, so Rishon Meir Kagan, right, also author of the Mishnah Berurah. So he's writing this letter saying why he approves of Beis Yaakov. So he's saying, normally, you know, we wouldn't really, like, it was fine what it used to be, they would be taught in the home, but, you know, because of all of the doubt and hesitation and the kfira running around like wildfire nowadays, you know, we need to give women a good education. That's why they need to go to Beis Yaakov. So because our generation is unlike previous ones, where the house of Israel has traditions of their mothers and their fathers to walk in the path of Torah and religiosity, where everybody's where they're all reading Santorana every Shabbat. So we don't have that due to our great sins nowadays, right? So in the good old days, we'd all used to read Santorana, and that kept us all from, and that was that. And in fact, if you were to take a look at, so this is the Satmar Rebbe, right, Reveal Teitelbaum, where he's, you know, so where he's talking about why women shouldn't be learning Chumash Rashi, and why they should only be reading Center, and why, you know, that's too much, and like why they, you know, because really Rashi isn't simply a Perush, basically giving you a summary of all of Gemara on the bottom if you actually read Rashi properly. So we know that we can't teach women Torah because it's considered to be Tiflut. So, and since you're teaching them, that teaching is basically Gemara when you're reading Rashi, so therefore you can't do that. But on the other hand, Santorana is good because it's, you know, it's in Yiddish. It doesn't have any of the, you know, halachic drashot or anything. Or if it does, it's in Yiddish, so who's going to understand? It makes no sense in Yiddish. And so they'll simply get out the parts about the Musar, their various ethical notes, as well as the part about how to improve their midot, their praiseworthy traits. And of course, it's worthwhile for all those reasons, because it's very important to make sure you have proper midot and that you have and you take proper Musar. And apparently it's more difficult to fix incorrect midot than it is to deal with issues of gilui ariot, of illicit relations. So that is the opinion of, right, the Satmar Rebbe, who's very much a big fan of the Santorana. In fact, similar sentiments are seen. This is a story involving Rav Kook, where, you know, he's reading it, and the story goes that he was doing it to encourage people to know that it's fine to read from Santorana. Because even though, you know, it's really designed for, you know, for bubbies and the less literate, he was making them feel good, and so that they would feel, you know, that there's something very valuable in this work, even though it's not necessarily, you know, the high end of literature, but it'll still go a long way. Right. So this is the common conception, you know, 20th century, what early 20th century, of what is the status of Santorana. But let's take a closer look at what Santorana actually is. So, right, so here, let's take a look at, here's a title page printed in Frankfurt in the 1735. Yeah. I did. That was the Satmar Rebbe.
No, let's say summer is
19. Now he, yes, it
hasn't. Because that's the date I'm saying.
Oh.
Chofetz Chaim and Savarov may have changed their mind today.
You have to ask I'm not, that's beyond the scope. I'm not touching on anything that's political or anything current in that sense. I'm simply going with the fact that that is the Karman conception of what Santorana is.
The only comment I want to make is because I know that much, but say this, Yaakov and Israel, they're not teaching
Santorana. Well, that's because they're teaching Chumash and Select.
Orashi,
which is what, if you read the whole letter of the Chofetz Chaim, which is only excerpts are here, so he does explain what things you should teach and which halachic things you need to know. Even the Satmar Rebbe thinks they need to know halachic pieces also. I just didn't translate that part because it wasn't relevant. But again, I was just focusing more on what their perception of Santorana was. So in fact, the story goes, you know, should women, you know, be able to understand Hebrew fluently or not? There's an argument between the Satmar Rebbe and his wife. And so the Satmar Rebbe's wife says, of course, they know Hebrew. Who else can they understand Tehillim? Right? What's the point of saying Tehillim if you don't understand a word of it? And then what was the response of What's up, Merevi? No. And guess what they did? They followed the Satmar Rebbe. So nowadays, if you were in their schools, they are not teaching them, you know, Hebrew and Hebrew grammar and how to read Chumash and what Tehillim mean. They are teaching them more in terms of Yiddish understanding, etc. And they are teaching them in terms of, you know, how to understand Tehillim and Chumash. That's a separate thing, point there, but since Emmy raised it, I'll may as well mention it. Okay. So this is the title page from 1735. So I'm going to now, since this is too small to see, you'll see it looks nice and pretty. It's got, you know, got some nice cutouts there. So here's it zoomed in. Hopefully people can read this a bit. So we say that this is the Sener Ena, quoted the verse, and then the verse from Shir Shirim. And then it's saying how beautiful it is, that it has a crown for you. Again, quoting more Psukim, from a man who's done many great actions. This is based on Pasuk Yeshayahu, right? And he made an excellent Perush al Torah. He made an excellent explanation of the Torah, that there's never been anything heard like it before or afterward, that has lit up the whole world. As it says, so you shall say to Beit Yaakov. And what does Beit Yaakov mean? Beit Yaakov means the women, right? And that's why it's written in such a gentle language, to explain it to their ears so that they can understand it. And also for men who are weak like women, right? Ish Asher Tashko Kokonekeva, right? So therefore, Sheshi Amim Yavo Lavi Taref El Beito works. He works 6 days a week, so he doesn't have time to learn. But that's why on Shabbos, both the unlearned man and the woman can together sit around and enjoy this book. So right, this was written by the great, and then a lot of praises for the author Rabbi Yaakov Rabbi Yitzchak of the family of Rabbi Noh. Again, not Ashkenazi, but again, Rabbi Noh or Rabbeinu, right, who lived in Yenova, right? And all of the, and then this is a verse from the Megillat Esther, Rekol Nashim, Inu Yakar, Vinifera, Sefer Zeh, the Megillah there is saying that, you know, a purpose of Achashverosh's decree was so that way the wives would respect their husbands. But anyhow, so that's the every better sent to her better. Right, and that's the main purpose of this. So this is in the title page from the 1735 edition in Amsterdam. But if we were to look at a little older version from, let's say, 10 years older. Let me shut the lights off. Here, sorry. That's the lights. Sorry, is that better?
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
That's much better.
Okay, great. Before this on the glare, for those who are here in person. Okay, so you'll notice that it looks a little bit similar in terms of the first verse being quoted, right? In terms of being crowned by the great man. And then it says, what did he start gathering together? So here it'll say that what did he do? He gathered and collated Midrashay Haggadot. So then he quotes this from the Midrashim, like the stories. And what else? But what else did he include? It's not just, you know, a simple translation of it for the women and men who don't understand. What did he do? He gave you a digest of Midrash, Rashi, Ramban, Rabbeinu Bechaya, Kizkuni, Esrar Hamor, Toldot Yitzchak, and many more commentaries. Right? And he does that on every single parsha, and all their words are so close to the truest understanding that that exists. And behold, it is given to us in the language of Ashkenaz. In this case, it means Western Yiddish, the Yiddish spoken in Germany. Okay, and it is great, and it is great worth for men and for women who can speak in this language. So from here, right? So you see that we all said, what is the purpose of Sener Ena? Right? We said we started off saying, oh, it's a Midrash book. It's for those who don't understand. It's for the women folk. But is that really what this work is the question, right? Is that really what it is? So the answer is no. So So, let me make sure quote his name properly. Here, Morris, Dr. Morris and Feierstein. So he has a critical edition of the of Center Arena. So as part of it, I was looking for the original title page from a 1622 edition, which is the oldest one that exists, but currently exists. But unfortunately, I couldn't find it. Digitized online. So sorry, the 1700s was the latest I could get you. But it's, again, you'll notice that it's very similar to the one that I just showed you. This is his translation of the original. And you'll see that it's very similar, right? So one thing to note is that the original that he points out is the original title isn't Senarena. The original title is the Chamisha Chomshe Torah B'Lashon Ashkenaz, right? The five books of the Torah in the language of Ashkenaz, meaning Western Yiddish, right? It doesn't mean German, it means Western Yiddish. And then you see, again, quoting the Supreme in the beginning here, right? And it says, what has he done? He has gleaned among the sheaves and collected from after many. He went up and he went down and there, here and there, quoting from the Midrashim, and then you see all these different commentaries, right? And it's useless, this work is for men and women who will find their quality for themselves, a place to rest for their souls in order to understand the words of the living God, right? So here, so what is clearly the case from the original as opposed to from the one that many people I see have their own editions of Center Arena, right? So unless you have one, note that the transition in terms of perception was, again, this was 1735, was when we started having the one that is aimed at women, whereas 10 years prior is the one that's still using the original print from the original edition, which was written, published when Yaakov Rabino was still alive. And so he clearly didn't have that intent at all. So also, another important thing that we're going to have to do is take a look at the text itself to see, is it really something that you could say is meant to be something like, a little bit of Midrash every week? Or is that simply a very uncharitable explanation of what this work actually is? So, all right, so then if you're interested in reading the Shul has the article version, there's also the version by Dr. Feierstein, which is online, which I included the link at the PowerPoint. If you look Center Arena in English, it comes right up on Google Books. So the first several hundred pages are free, so it gets you all the way through, through Shemot, if you're interested in reading through it in English. So something that he pointed out, which I mentioned already, is that, again, it is not meant clearly for women. It was meant for everybody to help improve those who understood their main language was Yiddish. They wouldn't necessarily get everything in terms of, even if they were relatively, even if they could read Hebrew, they wouldn't have understood all of Chumash, so they needed something else. In fact, the serious translation should be quoted by the Taz, right? One of the commentators on Shulchan Aruch, right? Right, Rabbi David Halevi Siegel, he passed away 40 years after Reverend Rabino did. So again, not that far away. And as far as this negative sentiment, so Dr. Feierstein suggests that it's because of either A, because of the elitism of the Jewish academics, the Wissenschaft, the Studentums, or possibly because of some of Maskilim, right? Who wrote primarily in Hebrew, not really in Yiddish. So both these schools were very much didn't like the old Yiddish way, and so therefore they were very negative against it. Right?
Is there a marketing issue? I mean, if you put the title of the book in the feminine plural, that tells you who the audience might be.
Right. So as far as that being placed, so Center Arena, as you know, as when we read through, basically every single line of the title page is a nice quote from another pasuk somewhere in Tanakh. And Center Arena actually isn't referring to in the Midrash, right? Shir Shirim, if you look at Art Scrolls translation, when it says Center Arena, it's not referring to the translation of, it doesn't mean, women. What is the Midrash? What is Chazal's interpretation of Center Arena? It's referring to men going out to learn Torah. It's not referring to, to women at all. So yes, it would seem to lend itself towards that effect, but the answer is that, well, he put it in there because he put in a lot of nice verses to lead it off. And but once it became known as Senorena, so that it kind of, you know, like, again, I'm sure there were other translations also in Yiddish at the time, because his was clearly the most popular. And, you know, there have been hundreds of editions printed in dozens of languages, basically every language that, you know, the Jews spoke between, you know, 1700 or so and the 20th century. Right. So again, it was very widely translated and very popular. The fact that it isn't anymore is a good question. Why? Well, probably more due to the breaking of the tradition, thanks to displacements due to the Holocaust, more than anything else. But that would be the main result, I would think. Okay, so now let's in terms of the way the original was done. So again, you might not be able to read this. So again, this is a title page from the 1622 edition. Right, the first page. So again, it would start with, you know, a quote of a pasuk, then a translation typically into Yiddish. So again, but since I don't speak Yiddish, so we're simply going to go with the little summary I have here. My apologies, I really don't speak. I can read Yiddish, but it doesn't make any sense to me. So here's the digest. So what is the, right? So again, as far as the scope of what it covers, right, so Senorena is on week by week on the Parsha, on each of the Haftorahs, as well as on all of the Megillot, right? It's not a full translation as we'd have normally thought of it as, right? We've been doing full translations until now, so it wasn't a full translation. But it would point out the verse in question. Typically would start either with the words, you know, with one or two words like a Dibur HaMatchil, right, from the Pasuk, and then it would say Dos Es Teich. Right, which means in Yiddish this is or this means, right? So if you ever hear somebody saying I want to tell you Teich, that means they want to tell you a good Dvar Torah, a good explanation of something. And sometimes they'd use the words klomar just to say mean what the pasuk really means, because if you simply read through the Pesukim, it's not, you know, as much as any people like to pretend that of course I read through Chumash and I understood every single word. We all know that's not true. Right? Because the commentators don't believe that. So the fact that we would think that is even crazier. So, right? So then all as far as generally what he would do, so he would generally either, the main part of most of the book is compilation, as we mentioned before, of collated sources, be it from the Gemara, from the Midrash, from other early commentators of Rishonim, right? He pulls from all over the place, as we saw, and he quotes very sensibly. Right, so as far as some of the, for some typification, so on the Chumash, so we saw in the title page, it's pretty clear which ones he's quoting from. He mentions it, you know, again, some of the most frequent ones are Rashi, Ben Bechaya, Ramban, Tolda Yitzchak, and Nicholas Kuni, right? Sometimes we'll fully quote them, you know, but translated into Yiddish. Sometimes there'll be a paraphrase, let's say if it's a longer Ramban, and he'll, you know, condense it for the ease of the viewer. And if you're looking, let's say, at for Haftorah, so Haftorah taken from Nevi'im, from the prophets, so the two primary commentators he uses are Rashi and Radak, or David Kimchi, and he also uses some of the stories from Yalkut Shimoni, which is a collection of Midrashim that go along according to the Haftarot. So if there's three stories in Yalkut Shimoni, then he would generally translate those into Yiddish, so that way you would know some of the good Midrashim to help explain the Haftarah, because a lot of times you read the Haftarah, you're like, okay, that's a nice quotation of the Nevi'im, but you're like, I didn't understand a word of what the prophet said. So at least now you'll have a good story to go along with it to explain the message that parallels or is based off of the Haftarah. And then when he's commenting on any of the Chamesh Megillot, he primarily relies upon Rashi and the Aramaic Targumim. Interspersed throughout all the above, plenty of Gemara and general Midrash are basically everywhere. So as far as some of the fun historical things that occurred, so, and originally, right, so Rabbi Rubino wrote it in Western Yiddish, right, so it only got translated into Eastern European Yiddish in 1786, meaning when the Eastern Europeans were seeing it, that was already at the point where everybody thought it was just for women, but again, it was definitely widespread and read by basically everybody. Right, and eventually as time went on, so there was a lot of certain edits that crept in, people would sneak in, you know, theme messages to say why the Enlightenment's bad and how to defend against it. Also, they would also have added elements of about Chassidut, as Chassidut, you know, later became popular. Right, so all these things occurred. So now I'd like to, you know, go through a little bit about, or at least we should go through one, we should go through the very least one passage in Zanarena before we're finished. If we have more time at the end, I'm happy to go through more. Let's go through a passage and you'll tell me if you think it's meant for women or if you think it's meant for basically anybody who happens to be able to understand it better. Okay, so this is on this week's Parsha. Okay, so this is, so, Vaikath Paro v'nech alom, right? Paro woke and it was a dream. Paro woke up and he saw that the dream needed to be interpreted. So Chizkuni asks a question here. Why did the verse not say by the first dream that Paro woke and it was a dream? Right? He should have needed to interpret the first dream too. The explanation is that in the dream where the cows ate the other cows, this is not such a great novelty since the cows have mouths with which to eat. However, the 7 ears eating the other 7 ears is something novel. Therefore, Paro was frightened about the 7 ears of grain. Right, so then this is a very good, succinct explanation of Chizkuni's question and answer. Clear, understandable, right? Makes perfect sense. So, right, and as far as is this, you know, also important thing to note is that if you were to read through Zanarena without actually understanding what happened in Chumash, would this make any sense? The answer is no. You'd have to know the basic storyline. You'd need to know that Paro had a dream. Right. Then the first dream was seven good cows swallowed by 7 terrible, you know, terrible, skinny, you know, cows. And then, right, the second dream happened with the 7 beautiful ears of corn and the 7, you know, dried and husked and gross looking ones. And then they ate them too, just like with the cows. Right. If you didn't have that background, right, you could kind of get it from here, but it would be very confusing and wouldn't make much sense. So the question is, so then what was the way this was originally intended? So the way it was originally intended is most likely something similar to, well, Rashi, right? So here is the Taz, right? I mentioned it before, right? Right, David Levy Siegel, right? So, commenting on Or HaChaim, right? So what does he say? That, so this is talking, normally every week you're supposed to, before you go to Torah reading, you should have read through the Torah twice and read an explanation of it, right? Commonly referred to as Shnai Mikra Vechad Targum. So which used to be done by, you know, reading, you read the Chumash twice, and then you'd read Targum Unkelus. But as time went on, and people didn't understand Unkelus anymore, because people stopped speaking Aramaic, so then people started to put in other things. So already in the time of the Shulchan Aruch, right, so it's very accepted to utilize Rashi instead of using Unkelus, because Rashi would help you understand what's going on with Chumash, where if you've read Unkelus, you'd look at it and you'd be like, well, I'm still confused, but okay. Right, so instead, again, so you should use, because if you understand Hebrew, so reading the Chumash in Hebrew and Rashi would do the trick. So, but here's the Taz. This is within 50 years, writing this is less than 50 years after the Zanarena was published, and before, again, it was already super popular throughout all of Europe. So he says that for the Targum part of Shnai Mikra Vechad Targum, so those who can understand Rashi properly should use it as for the explanation of the text. For those who aren't so learned definitely can read the explanation of the Torah in Ashkenaz, meaning in Yiddish, in our days, such as those as the books of Zanarena and those like it, to understand the ideas of the Parsha. So from here, it's quite clear that, again, so this is a pretty important comment, a halakha decider, quoting Zanarena, not because it's some, you know, oh, it's for those who don't understand. It's like, no, like, if you want to have a good understanding of what's going on in the Parsha, you know, if you do this, in addition to reading the Chumash, like, you will really know it quite well, like, you know a lot, right? It's not, no, not should not be belittled. Because, well, as we saw, again, that was just one passage. If people are interested, I know we have time at the end, I'm happy to show more. I realized that I actually went faster than I thought I would, time-wise. So again, I'm happy to go through the Haftarah as well, right? Some of the, and the stories that are there, which will give you more, again, that'll make you feel more like, oh, this is more of a storybook. But again, we'll see that it's not simply stories, but it actually is building upon the text itself. Correct, but is that this is you're fulfilling a weekly obligation that is coming upon men, right? Men are required to do this every week, and it's saying this is perfectly fine. It's not degrading. It's like just you're not fluent in Hebrew, so you'll probably get more out of a translation in vernacular, such as nowadays. If somebody wants to know should they do shnamek or vechat targum, right? They want to prepare the weekly portion so they know what's going on, right? So the recommendation would be feel free to go through it with Art Scroll or your favorite English translation, Rabbi Sachs's translation.
But I'm curious. It's only a minority of the Chumash that is stories. How does it deal with the Tochacha or Korbanot or illicit relations? What does it do with all this stuff that isn't the fun stories?
So we can take a look at that. So, but before we get to that, let me just summarize what we've covered till this point, and then we can go explore more in terms of what Senarena has to offer. So I just didn't want to, go too long. Okay, here we go. So in summary, right, it's originally written in Western Yiddish by Rabbi Yaakov Rabino, so people could have a better access, understanding of Torah, the Haftorah, as well as the various Megillot that are read throughout the year. It had extreme popularity, published hundreds of times. Eventually became associated with Torah learning for women. Again, exactly how and why is a good question, but it did. That may have led to getting a little bit of a bad rap, which is why nowadays most people here probably have not really read it, because they're like, well, should I read that? So the answer is it's a good digest, so that's why you should read it if you are so inclined. And as far as why it lost popularity, so part of it was because it was viewed as part of the old world because it was in Yiddish. And also because, as we mentioned before, getting the associations that were even on the title pages almost 300 years ago of it being meant for those who are women or not learned, which, again, that was not, yes, it was meant for those who weren't, who couldn't read the commentators inside, but most people can't read every commentator inside and would appreciate a nice, good digest. Because if you're, as many people know, if you try reading things on Friday night, when you're tired, you're turning something heavy, you'll open it, get through a page, and you'll be asleep. But something that's nice, clear, organized in a good fashion, you'll hopefully be able to get through far more of it, understand even more, which will be better to your learning of Torah. Would it be better to do it inside and look at every commentary as they originally wrote it? Of course. But we don't live in a perfectly ideal world. We all have infinite amounts of time and energy. So sometimes aids such as the Senarena are really, really useful. As far as the content goes, so he assumed a basic knowledge of each of the basic plot and details of Chumash, Haftarah, and Megillot, and he drew upon an amazing array of sources, both commentators, Midrash, and Gemara. And true, he did focus at points a lot on the story aspects, but that's because he knew his audience, and if you want to keep a rapt audience, using stories is helpful, so can't fault him for that. And again, and as far as the I think it's double click there. So here's the translation by Dr. Feristein. Again, you can get on Google Books. And also just want to point out that next week we are going to be continuing with talking about English translations again on Wednesday night at 8:15. If anybody has any questions up till this point, feel free to ask them. And then afterwards, I know that Mark had pointed out something that he would like to look at in terms of the general center in on other parts. So I'm happy to open that up as well. So any questions before we start looking at some more parts of Senarena? Yes. Yes, Elaine.
This isn't a translation. They're assuming that these people know the stories and they just want to
come. So it gives a little more background than just that. It's like kind of halfway in between. As opposed to, Rashi will simply go straight into his comment, and it's like here it sometimes gives some more background, sometimes not. It depends. So if you read through it in a row, you'll notice that sometimes he gives more explanation as to what's going on, sometimes not. Sometimes it's a whole nice midrash there, sometimes it's not. But it's not, let's say, if you read through the little midrash says where it's, clearly a reworking of the Parsha in shortened form with the Midrashim thrown in nice pictures. So yes, the Senarena, as time went on, eventually had cutouts and other things to make it more interesting for those who were, you know, less into reading the digest. But as far as overall looking at it, you'll see that wasn't really the case. So let me make sure that I'm still logged into the, here we go. Make sure that this is still logged in because it logs me out. Yep, log in again. 1 second. No, it's the wrong. No, there we go. 1 second. Just logging in so I can. Uh-oh. Sorry, just trying to pull it up, the translation. So, PDF of full text. 1 second, just get a login. Then I'll have it for you. Sorry. What happens when you are not connected to the internet for a little bit? Sometimes you lose things. And I think we're good. Okay, there you go. Let me reshare. Okay. So, all this. It's not on the screen. I think I have to move it to the other screen. 1 second. Sorry. Okay, can everybody see it? Online and in person? Everybody can see it? Online, you can see it also? Yes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, making sure that you can all see it. Okay, so you wanted to take a look at, I believe the question was, we wanted to look a little bit at what it does, let's say, for Vayikra. So let's go to a part of Vayikra that we'd say is, so here, yes, it does look like a lot more like stories.
Here. Yeah, I'm not... How does it deal with the boring stuff? Is what I'm basically saying.
Right. So let's scroll to a random part in the middle of Vayikra. Let's hope we don't wind up in the middle of here. Shmini. Here. So.
Well, the first half of Shmini is stories. Is the,
right. Okay,
the death. Okay, so the second half is Kashrut.
Okay, let's see if we have the, here we go. Kedoshim to you. Right? So you'll note here that it starts on, you know, from the word of Kedoshim to you, right? So it starts at the beginning, it goes right into a story. Right? So, but then that makes sense because, well, again, remember his target audience. So yes, there are plenty of stories here, right? The verse teaches, right? That a person should not follow the desires of their heart. Each person who removes himself from the desires of his heart is compared to an angel. One who follows the sense of his desires like an animal, right? So this is definitely, you know, more in terms of the midot than it is in terms of, you know, an explanation of what on earth is going on with Parsha Kedoshim, right? Let's say, does even mention anything about the Arayot, honoring parents, keeping Shabbos, focusing more on Kedoshim to you. Right, so then he's not going to, here, let's keep going until he gets to the, right, so he's quoting a lot of Midrashim and nice stories, but then again, if you were to look at Rashi here, he does a similar thing, when he's not quoting the Gemara, here, we go, let's see if, and that's, here, so, right, so here, again, so he's it's not his Kiddush, he's quoting the total Yitzchak on this, in terms of the learning out the message from the Tzukim. Because most people aren't so interested in the, you know, various things about, you know, when you should eat, you know, about alcohol, things like that, because it's simply not what most people are interested in doing. So he brings it to more relevant. But again, that's also what most commentators do over the course of Vayikra as well. So here. So here, to explain, so you're right, so it is less in terms of we saw before, whereas more of a digest here in terms of like direct questions here. It's a little more, you know, stories that aren't necessarily as tied to the text. Here's one that is a question though, right? So one, right, about committing adultery, right? So So here, you know, you have a question. I told Yitzchak. So why does the verse say twice to married woman or to marry the man's wife? What do you need both for? Which is, you know, more of a Gemara type question. The explanation is that it was with a Gentile woman. He's not liable for the death penalty, but if you do with a Gentile woman who has a husband, right? So you will not be put to death for it. Yeah, so he's teaching you more things, right? So that's first he quotes the explanation of Gemara, and then he gives another explanation that referencing Reuven sleeping with Shimon's wife. This is a hypothetical case. So where each of them cheated on each other, right? This is, you know, excellent. So, I mean, this is terrible, right? So I might say that Shimon is not culpable because Reuven did it first. Therefore, Shimon may also sleep with Reuven's wife as, you know, as revenge. That makes perfect sense. If the Torah writes that, no, if you are doing it back to the other person, you were both being put to death. Why did you do that? Right? So then, yes, there are stories, but sometimes it's also quoting Midrashim or other halachot as well. It's not simply just, you know, nice stories. This is definitely not a, you know, oh, this is a nice, pleasant story. This is a little intense. So what was the other part you wanted to take a look at, Mark? You had something else you wanted to take a look at?
The really boring stuff, like building the Beit HaMikdash and the, you know, like the tabernacle and the measurements. And like, I'm just saying, you know, that's just typical. Or the tochacha, I said also. Like the stuff, right? That's not so palatable.
That'd be the very, here, hard to decide. Let's scroll up here. So let's see what we have here. So that's Haftara. Let's go a bit. Here we go. Yeah, this is Parashat Bechukotai, with Hezatofa in it. Here. So you're right. So he's not. So these aren't explanations of the Tofa. Again, sorry for not spending so much time. Look, I'm just kind of scrolling through it. Right. So you don't hear that he's. Again, it's not explaining the text. It's just stating, you know, a story that's associated with the verse. So then the answer is, why is he doing that? The answer is because, well, the verses are pretty weighty, and instead he's giving a message that'll hopefully help you not to sin, so that way you won't be stuck with the issues that come up.
Okay.
So I hope that, yeah.
It does. It's good.
Yeah. Yes, Mommy.
So why is this?
He is quoting other sources. He's not misrepresenting anything. He's quoting other Midrashim. So it's not like there's anything crazy. He won't quote anything anti-halachic. So that is that is something. He'll encourage you to follow Torah mitzvot. He's quoting you other commentaries or other Gemaras on the topic. And he's just giving it to you in a way that's, you know, a little more digestible. Correct. It's like a little book of drasha on the parsha. Right, like that, as it, but that. But it's much more sophisticated than the midrash says. The midrash says, because there are points where he gives, you know, he quotes some. Yeah, sometimes it is primarily just stories, but that's, you know, on the book, you know. But as I'm sure many people here sat through many a drasha, a rabbi sermon on during the, you know, on in during Vayikra, and a lot of times it's. You're not going to get a very in-depth shiur discussing, you know, the laws of how to offer korbanot. Instead, you're going to get, you know, something that's more relevant because, well, if you try to start explaining how to offer korbanot, most people would simply either be grossed out or fall asleep or both. So, like, that's not going to necessarily have the desired effect of people understanding the parsha better and getting out the messages because, well, that's simply the way people work. Okay. So, and here, let's take a look at, let's say this, start off for shot for Hanukkah. Let's start down here. There we go. This week's Haftarah for Shabbos Hanukkah. Right? So, from Zechariah, So you'll so again, he quotes, you know, the first verse. Then it says, you know, when Mashiach will come, God will tell Zion, sing and rejoice, city of Zion, and I'll come rest among you. Many nations will attach themselves to the Holy One on that day, and it'll become a people, and I'll rest among them. Right. So here you'll see each get his little drasha on each verse. So, and it's, again, it's not, you know, if you read this without having read the Haftarah, you'd be very confused because you wouldn't really understand the Haftarah. And, right, and you know, and when he quotes the, you know, other verses, right, so it's talking about, you know, Yehoshua Kohen Gadol, right, and then what's going on there. So he gives some background as to what's going on here. But again, if you haven't read the actual Haftarah first, it won't truly replace it because you'll still need a lot of explanation to fully grasp everything. But as far as, you know, just like, let's say if you read Chumash and then Rashi, again, Rashi doesn't explain every single word. He doesn't summarize things. He just simply explains the parts they thought you might not have caught. So it looks like Rabino, again, he had definitely a different style than Rashi did. But as far as, you know, being commenting on commenting a lot and extensively, he definitely does that. And definitely, I believe, adds a lot to one's understanding of the parsha. Right. So, in the article version, it has subcategories and little subtitles giving you a summary of, like, you know, this story is about this. So in the original, it was not like that. That's a very good thing for readability and understanding of it. But in the original, it read as in the way that you see it now, in terms of it would have been in Hebrew with it alternating between Hebrew and Yiddish. It would not have had any nice, you know, clear summary of the next paragraph, chapter marks, like, here's the story of this. It wasn't organized like that. Later editors added that in because they're like, well, this would make it easier for somebody reading to follow better than it is simply opening up the original. But as far as, you know, what the message was, I think it is an overall very positive message and a lot can be gained from it. Right. So the Art Scrolls version is very condensed and it cuts some things out. Right. Which is, you know, I know that I see that also depends on which time you have it print. As in, I have it in the older Art Scrolls, 3 volumes, the newer ones, 2 volumes. So they probably, you know, yeah, there are parts that are cut out. I didn't do an extensive study as to which parts were edited out over the years, just as far as, you know, taking a look at it. Again, it's not the, yeah,
Art Scroll doesn't have that.
Right, so Art Scroll is not, you know, like, as, you know, again, Art Scroll is more, the Art Scroll version is more legible and is more condensed, as are some other more modern versions of the Tzenereta. But as far as overall the goal and what it accomplished, it definitely did a very good job of educating the Jewish people for several hundred years. Its popularity speaks for itself in that regard as well. So again, whether or not you should replace a Chumash, definitely not. But would it be a valuable companion commentary for many people? The answer is definitely. Okay. So I'm going to stop the recording now and wish everybody a happy Hanukkah.